bunch of gamers, one channel, and tons of games. This must be Games and Me.
Podcast content manager. He's helping us out with two of our biggest podcasts, and of course, you know, he needs some time to kind of get used to the formats and stuff. And of course, he's listening to this. Hello, Johan. But of course, this is Alex, and we have our host Magus, aka Anthony. So Anthony, you're going to be called Anthony in the entire website. So might as well start calling you Anthony instead of awkwardly calling you Magus next year when I pick you up at the airport for E3. So how's it going, dude?
Hey, Magus, what's up at the airport? Okay, not a whole lot. Just kind of been working my way through Mass Effect. And yes, people, I played a little bit of Halo. Sue me.
Well, you know, I couldn't help but notice that you were only playing Mass Effect on hard mode. Now, I have to say that Mass Effect was one of the few games that I actually not only replayed twice, but I replayed three times. I am currently on my third playthrough on Insane right now.
Wow. So you're playing through Insane?
Yeah.
To be honest, it's really not that hard.
No, it's not. That's why I'm playing through it again. I need to hit the level cap. I think the level cap is 60, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I unless it's 70 on Insane, maybe Insane raises it. I don't know. I'm almost to 60, though, because I'm playing with my original Captain Shepard, the one that I created the day the game came out.
Yeah.
So, but this time through, he's being a bastard.
I see.
Yeah, he's really being a bastard because I'm going for that Renegade achievement.
Oh, I see. Well, what I did was what did I do? I was goody two-shoes the first time around. And then the second time around, my Shepard was a total bitch. Up to the point where, you know, I did something bad in the ending, you know. So it'll be interesting when I'm loading, you know, this save file in Mass Effect 2 and saying, do you want to be the asshole Shepard or do you want to be the nice Shepard? And you want to be the one that you played on Insane.
I wonder if I doubt they'll carry levels over.
You know, I thought about that, but I'm not sure. I never really got clarification. It was only the choices that were carried over, it looks like. But again, don't quote me on it. No idea.
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot of details on the game yet. And what I want to know, too, is if I'm playing with my second, you know, my Commander Shepard through the second game, would I be able to choose from, you know, my original ending or my second ending that I'm going to accomplish?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. Because when you load that file, when you select that Commander Shepard, it's going to tell you, well, you beat the game like three different times, so using this one character. So which one do you want? Which ending do you want? That's what's going to happen.
Okay, I like that. Because I want to choose the original ending. Because
yeah.
Some of the, you know what's interesting is as much as I'm going through the Renegade, I feel bad for some of the shit I'm doing. I really, that game makes you feel fucking guilty.
Well, I don't know about that. I made my character really look ruthless. I mean, first of all, it's a chick who has like a really bad tan with brown hair and has like a scar going across her face. And I made her eyebrows look like she's always pissed off. So even if she was like being really nice, she looked like she was going to kick you in the nuts. I was like, man, I wouldn't want to cross this Shepard.
My Commander Shepard looks like me. He's got the stash and everything. And I just made him look like me. You know, his name's Anthony Shepard, you know. So I named him that. And like I said, no, I really feel guilty for some of the stuff. Like there's these characters that like I'm an asshole to and they don't deserve it. Like, you know, spoil alert. You know, can I do a quick spoil alert?
Yeah, 2 minutes. Fast forward for 2 minutes, and then we'll be back. Okay.
Okay, I killed Arachni, and I felt bad for doing that.
Arachni? I never even found the Arachni.
You got to do that. That's after you kill Benezia, and the, you know, those bug-like aliens.
Oh, okay,
you have
okay, yeah. Okay, I remember now. I thought you were talking about the rare race, the Batarians or something like that.
The Batarians are the ones on the first downloadable content, Bringing Down the Sky.
Yeah, it's just a minor confusion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying. I would probably have gotten confused because I forgot all the races' names before I replayed it.
Yeah.
But I remember, okay, so I killed Arachni, which I did not do because I have a hard time being a bad guy on these type of games.
Mm-hmm.
And Bioware is very good at making you feel, you know, guilty. And I'm just waiting for that infamous choice on Vermeer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, the infamous choice where you know, one member lives and one member dies.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that all plays out. But being an asshole just for an achievement, I feel kind of guilty, you know. But there's times when I kill a character, you know, and they deserve it. I'm like, yeah, you should have fucking died, ruthless mm-hmm. bastard.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think we talked about this before extensively, but
yeah.
By the way, welcome back for the guys who are trying to avoid the spoilers. Basically, just to kind of close this, when I was a renegade, I wasn't like what you said before. Renegade doesn't necessarily mean that you're being an asshole. You're just going to be you're basically just a tough guy. That's kind of like the role that I played when I was Commander Shepard as a renegade. Basically, she's like a brass tacks type of military person that won't take shit for an answer. You know, so when it came time, you know, when that important decision was made, I went with the person who was most more capable of surviving in battle. So it wasn't like I was being a dick. I was like, well, sorry. I mean, you suck. You can't shoot worth shit. You know, this person, on the other hand, can do a lot more things that you're totally incapable of doing. So that's kind of like how I looked at it.
It's an excellent game, and I'll hopefully have something else to talk about next week. Two games, so.
One last thing.
That's it.
You know what? I heard from my friend, you know, one of my insider friends from the corporate at GameStop, that they have a date slated for February, but no specifics as to when, which is very dangerous because the first quarter is already packed with some great games like God of War 3 and Bayonetta and, well, it used to be Bioshock 2, but no longer.
That's odd. You know why? One thing before we move on.
Yeah.
Two. That's very close for a BioWare release because BioWare releases are usually quite spread out. It was 2 years between Knights of the Old Republic and, you know, Jade Empire. And then even then, you know, before, after Neverwinter Nights, you know, and then it's been a, so that's kind of weird because we get Dragon Age in October or no, early November.
Yeah.
And then we might get Mass Effect 2 in February. That's pretty close apart for two major massive BioWare games. But that makes me a very happy man.
Okay.
So close together. So, Alex, what have you been playing?
Well, I don't know if you know, but Beatles Rock Band came out last week. And it is it's a great game. Great presentation. Great music, as usual. By the way, this game features the remastered versions of the songs, which means, you know that $250 pack that's selling right now on Amazon and Best Buy that contains the complete remastered classic songs from the Beatles?
Yes.
This game has it.
So it has those, it doesn't have all the songs, though.
Doesn't have all the songs. It has 45 of the songs that are included in the actual remastered box set, and they're going to release DLC throughout the month in order to do that. Now, just a clarification, you cannot use any DLC from other Rock Band games in Beatles Rock Band, and you cannot use any of the Beatles Rock Band DLC on other Rock Band games, which, you know, bottom line is the Beatles Rock Band is what should have been, you know, the definitive band game, you know, if it's ever based on any one band. Like, you know, Guitar Hero Metallica exists. It claims it has 60 or 80 songs, but maybe only half of that is Metallica's. Because
yeah,
you get, like, I don't know, Hoobastank or Blink-182 in the other 40. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't appreciate that, because you're basically bastardizing, like, the band itself, saying, like, oh, look at the, you know, look at all the other songs that are within Metallica's league. Check this out. And you can definitely see the huge amount of respect that Harmonix has, you know, kind of implied and kind of shown with both the interface, the presentation, the opening movie, and just every single facet of the game. Now,
I want to ask you something, Alex. What do you think of all the media attention this game has been getting?
Well, it's obvious that it's going to be a big deal, because Apple Corps is a very strict company. Now, in case you guys don't know, Apple Corps is basically comprised of all the, you know, the existing Beatles and stuff, and their families and their estates. They basically own the rights to it. And Michael Jackson actually owned quite a bit of the Beatles catalog as well. They wouldn't just license the Beatles name just to make money. They are, just like Apple Computers, they are extremely protective of their name. They're not just going to whore something out because, oh, well, we're about $15 million short of something, but, you know, so might as well do this. It's the Beatles. They don't, you know, they're freaking set for life. They're probably, like, you know, their fortune can probably fund maybe two generations worth of kids, okay? And go through college and have private schools and have, like, you know, their future is taken care of. So,
and they wouldn't get away with the shit that the Guitar Hero pulls with Metallica and stuff, too.
No. In fact, there are a couple of changes that are most notable in the Beatles Rock Band that don't occur in all the other Guitar Hero band games. As an example, when your band sucks in Rock Band and Guitar Hero, generally you're booed off. Not in the Beatles Rock Band. You are never booed off. Also, when, you know, you get these certain modifiers when you're holding a fret down on the guitar, you can use the whammy bar to get more points. Well, guess what? That does not alter the song well. So there's certain things that they've had to sacrifice in order to maintain the integrity of the Beatles. And just as another and final note, this is a revisionist history of the Beatles. This is not a docudrama or documentary or anything. This only recounts all of the best times the Beatles have had. So in certain sections where Ringo Starr isn't supposed to be there, he will be there. But what's good about the game is that it manages to introduce the Beatles to an entirely new generation. They don't really care of converting people who don't like the Beatles into Beatles fans. They just want to introduce it, you know, the newer generation to what was the Beatles and why they were a big deal back then. You know, and I think they've accomplished it for the most part.
That is interesting. And, well, I'm not a Beatles fan and I'm not a Rock Band fan, but it's interesting to see all the coverage this game has been getting. And it's, you know, it's great to see that, you know, a game is getting recognition for, you know, showing the history of a band as big as the Beatles and stuff, instead of just being a documentary or something. Yeah. And that's very cool.
Yeah. Again, it's not a docudrama of the Beatles, so it doesn't document the turmoil within the group, but that's okay, because what they really want you to appreciate is the music. And for the most part, you know, and I'll say this, the game doesn't become interesting personally to me until you get to the Dreamscapes, which is kind of like Harmonix's kind of interpretation of some of the songs when you get into Abbey Road, which is, you know, because what happened with the Beatles is that after several years of touring on the road, they decide to just stop touring and they become a studio band. So that time period is basically, you know, where the Dreamscapes come in, because it's not that interesting to be staring at a blank wall for, I don't know, 18 songs or more or something like that, you know?
You want to see all kinds of psychedelic crazy shit.
Oh, and you see that.
Is it like doing drugs or something, or I don't know.
Pretty much.
I don't know. Pretty much. Oh, man. Good old Beatles. Have you been playing anything else by chance, Alex?
Professor Layton and the Diabolical Box were just recently reviewed. By the time this comes out, we have a brand new review format. So, you know, definitely go check that out, because that's very, very interesting. Great game. Very challenging when you get to maybe past the 50 puzzle mark. So,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So nothing else?
Yeah. I think we should take this time for a break, though, so that we can come back and talk about the... I guess we're going to be ranting today, right?
We'll be kind of ranting and not ranting. We got a mix 50-50 thing going on today, so...
Okay. All right, cool. So let's take this break, and we'll be back.
Hey, everyone, it's Tim McKay, Jumble Junkie, and join me on my podcast, Jumble Junkie. No, there's not more than one of me, there's just me. But I have my buddy Alex sitting with me, and it's going to be a good time. We have some games, we're going to talk about video games, we got some skits, and a whole bunch of good stuff. So check it out on Jumble Junkie.
All right, we're back. So, Magus, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to be talking about motion controllers and their impact, and are they, and I hope to God they won't ever replace the traditional remote, the control, because I want to talk about this because at E3, Sony and Microsoft unveiled their motion controls. Okay, now, Sony seems like to be a kind of a something, you know, I don't know if I want to call it a Wiimote clone. I don't really know what to call it, to be honest, Alex. What would you call it?
I don't think this is a Wiimote clone at all. I mean, I guess you could kind of argue that, but Sony did start using cameras for their motion control. I mean, we saw that in the iToy. Remember that the Wiimote itself is actually an IR camera at the end of it. So it's not really a remote. It's a camera.
Right.
So, you know, I think that Sony is just moving forward in terms of their current technology. And they've already gone through what Microsoft has gone through. But I don't want to get into that before we talk about this. So.
Right. Right. I just wanted to make sure, because it's kind of hard for me to classify what exactly that is.
Okay.
But Natal, on the other hand, is Natal. It gets me excited, but it leaves me with a lot of skepticism too, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, what was that? I'm so dumb today. What was that fucking, what was Peter Molyneux's fucking little tech demo called?
Milo.
Milo, the lovable little kid. Yes, good old Milo.
It's what I call the child molester simulator.
Oh shit. All right, let's put it this way. Milo got me excited because of the possibilities what you can do. But then they had the shitty ass, you know, stupid paint demo and stuff. You know, do we, you know, let me ask you this. Does motion control let developers get lazy with stupid shit like that? I mean, there's inventive uses that you could do, and I've seen, you know, developers use inventive uses of motion control, but there's also, you know, it makes them, lets them get lazy.
Well, so let's address a fundamental important fact that people keep forgetting when all of this motion talk is actually talked about, specifically Natal, because obviously it, you know, it's the, you know, I guess it's the golden boy of all the motion controllers right now, because it actually has a name. Even if it's just a project name, it's called Project Natal. It's not going to be called Natal when it comes out. How is it going to know where your fists are? Now, I know that sounds very, very trivial, but the way that, you know, the way that current 3D cameras work, or current cameras work, is they take a picture of the background and they keep that in memory, and any sort of saturation difference between the background and, you know, the new picture, because what it really is it's taking a lot of pictures, like, really, really fast. If the color difference is different than what it's used to, then it considers that as movement. Are you with me, Magus?
I get that. I completely understand that.
Okay. Current camera technology allows us to capture and try to figure out where our face is. So that's great. People understand that. Now, with this whole movement thing, you can kind of approximate where your hands are on the side specifically. If you wave your hands like you're doing a jumping jack, you will know just by looking at a person head on what their left arm is and what their right arm is, right?
Right.
We saw a demo or a concept demo at E3 where a guy is literally pretending to hold a gun. Based off of that concept that I mentioned to you of comparing a already pre-existing assumption of what pixels are and where the person is, where would you think the hands will, you know, will be according to that?
Huh.
Where the elbows will be. Because that's the only thing that's jutting out from the left and the right part of the body.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
So basically, unless there's something magical about this that that basically sends, like, kind of like a sonar signal that sends a signal out and then spits back into the camera to process real three-dimensional data. And even then, it could be flawed, because if you're holding a gun in like a V shape, like a pistol, you know, it'll only bounce off of where it can, you know, detect. So I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on Natal, but get this. All of the demos of Natal occur in highly lighted environments.
Do you know what? I'm thinking about that. That room where they were testing Milo was bright as fuck.
Exactly.
That was a bright fucking room. And then, of course, well, what about the when they were doing all the stuff live on stage? That was kind of, well, it's kind of dark.
That's already what the iToy does, though.
Oh, the iToy. Okay, so yeah, if you, that's why I wasn't real impressed with that, because I had seen shit like that before, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen games where, fuck, even the Xbox already does that shit.
360. Yeah, with the current camera.
Yeah, that. You, what's that one live game? The one where you pretend you're a ball and you use the vision cam?
Yeah.
Yeah, that fucking game. Yeah, I remember that. It already fucking, that's not really, that's, you know, when I was watching that E3 conference, that wasn't really anything special, dude. And that stuff didn't impress me at all. I'm like, I've seen this. I've seen it on the iToy. I've seen it. The Xbox already fucking, the 360 already does shit like that.
It doesn't do 3D positional, you know, detection, which,
right,
again,
right.
Like I said, I'm not an expert at this, but I would assume that there has to be something else that it's sending out and reading back in order to detect 3D, you know, motion and stuff. But using the, to me, using the body as a controller is a terrible idea. Now, I'm going to turn this around on you, Magus, because I want to know what you think about the PlayStation 3's version of motion controls, because, you know, I have nothing bad to say about it, I'll be honest.
All right. You know, I'm going to be a little blunt here, Alex, and to be honest, motion control in general can be fun. As for the Sony ones, what I did like about it, and I wasn't dogging on it earlier, I couldn't find the proper words for it. But what I really liked was when they were doing the archery. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And the sword play? That stuff was pretty cool. And yeah. It looked like it was really fluid. Those and they weren't doing anything real fancy, which was interesting. They were doing these real basic tech demos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that very prototype stuff. Remember right. The graph, the models and such weren't, impressive from a graphical point, but it needn't be because what it did was effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there, remember that, I think, wasn't he fighting skeletons or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was sword fighting skeletons, and that was really cool, the way, it moved in sync with the way he was moving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that I liked. So I will agree with you. The Sony motion controls are really cool. And can I talk about Nintendo for a second real quick?
Because, yeah, let's go to that, yeah.
I even though I don't own Wii Sports Resort, I did get to play it for quite a bit.
Okay.
And that was at the Batman Arkham Asylum launch. I haven't talked about this yet. And I got to play with the Wii Motion Plus. And I have to say, I was very impressed with that little device.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I have to say, because I have a Wii, and I don't have Wii Motion Plus. I don't have Wii Sports Resort, okay?
Right.
But the one game that I can tell the significant difference in terms of sensitivity and just the way it controls was bowling. Because I have played bowling on Wii Sports, and I have played on Wii Sports Resort, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I was thoroughly impressed. What was an absolute blast was the archery in that game, too. You know? The Wii Motion Plus really just it makes the Wiimote feel quite a bit different, uh-huh. in my opinion. It really does. You know, it just you when you did the archery, you really felt like you were really doing it. You know,
right?
Or the sword fighting, because let's take a look at something like Zelda or Twilight Princess. When you swing the sword, you just tilt it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't really feel like you were swinging the sword. They could have just done that with a button press, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
I think you could have done that with button presses. But with the way, the sword fighting in Wii Sports Resort was, it was really just, it felt really tight.
Right.
Okay? It just really felt really tight and intuitive, as opposed to just twisting your wrist. So that, in all honesty, I really thought was impressive. So really quickly, I want to go back to one thing about Project Natal. The only thing that really impresses me with Natal is the way you can, interact, not in the sense of moving your body as the controller, but, talking to characters in games and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Now, I'll admit, we'll get, if Natal's a success, it'll be years till we get, till we get to an RPG where we actually have to interact with characters. But just
let's not even go there right now.
Oh no, I know. But I'm just saying that's just the possibilities. Far-fetched ones.
Well, let me talk about right now.
Okay, what's right now?
Because last year, unbeknownst to people, Sony released a trailer for a game that wasn't talked about too much, and a lot of people thought were just smoke and mirrors. Do you know what I'm talking about, Magus?
Was that Heavy Rain? No, maybe not Heavy Rain. What was it?
I don't think we're talking about Heavy Rain with motion control.
Okay, what game was it?
And just as a side comment, CK, who's helping out with our podcast today, mentioned that talking was actually first seen and interacting with the character with Seaman on the Dreamcast.
Oh, yeah, Seaman.
Uh-huh. Sega. Okay. There was a game called iPet where you can actually literally interact with a virtual pet on screen where you can give him toys, draw something, and he'll, draw it with you. Use any items that you draw, like a spaceship or a car or something like that, and they can interact with it.
Ah, so it was Project Milo before Project Milo.
Yes. No one, somehow people conveniently forgot about it somehow. So it's like when Microsoft showed it, it's like, oh my God, this is awesome. And then when Sony shows it and announced, by the way, that it's coming out in November of this year, people are like, oh, they're copying Project Milo. I'm like, yeah, you're conveniently forgetting about that because Sony released that trailer last year at last E3.
You know what? I want to bring up something people have seemingly forgot that Sony did was pretty neat, too. Mm-hmm. Was, do you remember, and I never got to play it, but I heard it was quite good, was Eye of Judgment, I think it was called?
Right.
Yeah, you got to admit, that was a cool concept. I thought it was, because I kind of like those type of card games. I used to play Magic and shit. But yeah. I digress on that. I remember seeing that game. I was like, that's pretty cool. You know, you could hook up the little... What is that camera called?
It's the PlayStation Eye.
The PlayStation Eye, okay. You could hook it up and, you know, that's a really neat concept that you could scan cards and they come alive.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty innovative, too.
Yeah.
That is a cool idea. That is really a cool idea. And then you go buy expansion packs and stuff and you see more, you know, it kind of adds to the game.
Yeah.
What people don't know about
the PlayStation Eye also, not only is it a higher resolution camera, but unlike Nintendo's Wii Speak, where it only just has, where it's like a separate peripheral from whatever else they're going to sell, it already contains an omnidirectional camera, or rather, sorry, microphone on it. So not only could you use the PlayStation Eye as a webcam and a web conferencing tool, or even a tool to play Eye of Judgment with, but you could also use it for multiplayer games. Like any multiplayer game that requires you to have a microphone.
Right.
That's not a known fact.
Huh. I wonder why people are forgetting these facts. Is it just fanboyism or something? I don't know.
Well, just misinformation probably from other people. Like I've lately been encountering like some misinformation in some of the media. Not too often in certain cases. I don't want to name names because I'm not that kind of person, but right now at least. But it's people need to remember that there are certain pluses to their systems. Like, as an example, using the PlayStation Eye as a microphone when there's three players here locally that's playing Little Big Planet and we're playing with a friend of mine from New Hampshire in the East Coast, he could hear all of us fine, you know, and our Sackboy would talk while we're talking, of course. So that was pretty funny because we were all talking through one Sackboy. But, that's the sort of thing that's cool. Now, going back to this iPad thing.
Hold on, Sackboy was going Linda Blair?
Pretty much, like when it detects that somebody's talking, it pantomimes the voice and stuff. It's really creepy. But going back to the iPad thing, they give you a little card that you can transform into different tools, and you can use that to interact with your pet. So it can turn into a shower, it can turn into a control panel. It can turn into an X-ray machine. So there's a ton of things that Sony's already thought of with that sort of technology. And the motion controller is kind of like, I don't know if you remember the press conference that Sony had about this, but Richard Marx, the guy who has been studying this technology since the iToy, has basically said directly, 3D technology for gameplay without the use of any controller, we've already done that. It doesn't work. People like to hold things to kind of give the impression that they're interacting with something.
Hmm.
And the funny thing is, Nintendo echoes the same statement. They basically said, Yeah, we were playing around with like a prototype, you know, camera for the Revolution when it, you know, we were concepting it. But we felt that, you know, you needed to have something tangible in order to feel that you're doing something in a game. So
that is a good point.
Turned around, it looks like Microsoft is going in a very risky direction, even though a lot of people are, you know, are being drawn to it because it has a name.
Well, I am very skeptical of it, and I will tell you this. I'm not going to buy the fucking thing. not until it's proven, you know? I mean, Milo did blow me away, Alex. And like I said, I know you said I was getting ahead of myself, but I was just thinking of the possibilities, you know? Imagining you could actually talk to your characters like in an RPG. Wouldn't that... I mean, that's far-fetched. You know, that's not till like 20 years from now, probably.
But here's the thing. I'm implying that it's already here.
Oh, you're implying that
I can do that.
The PlayStation. Okay. Okay. So you're saying that technology is already here with the iPads.
That's because an example of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. I see what you're saying now. But I want to say this, though. I don't want to see the controller go away, to be honest. The old fashioned controller. And I know I'm kind of drifting off, but this is relevant to the Natal, you know. You know, the way Microsoft, one thing Microsoft was doing was with Natal was that you could control the dashboard. Remember that?
Yeah.
You can control the dashboard. I'm like, okay, that's not really that great, you know. I mean, that's really not that great. I mean, I can I'm not impressed by this. Maybe, I don't know. That didn't really impress me, moving your hands to move the dashboard. I'd rather just use my controller.
Well, here's
know?
The thing, though. You got to think of not... you got when you're thinking of motion controls, you also now have to think of the way that the Wii and pretty soon the new PlayStation motion controller is going to handle it. Because,
right.
Again, if we take into account what Nintendo and Sony have said, and they basically said the fact that you're not interacting with... you're basically interacting with thin air, basically. It's not that intuitive. I mean, again, they already tried it before. Even Microsoft tried it, which is why they're making a brand new camera, you know? So we have to think of it, how it'll work with existing stuff. Because it's not enough that you make new technology. You need to figure out what it means to current games. Or else you're just wasting R&D, you know?
I understand that. I see where you're coming from. And like I said, I'm going to be honest with you, Alex, too. I think when Natal does get launched, when whatever it's going to be fucking called next year, there'll be a lot of shovelware shit too for it, too, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not knocking on Microsoft. I mean, I love the 360 more than any of the other consoles. Personally, that's my opinion. Not saying it's a fact that it's better, but, you know, that's just the console I prefer. But Natal, you're absolutely right. I'm even more skeptical of it now that you're telling me this stuff. And Sony's, while I think their motion control is cool, I think it's going to suffer from the same problems, you know, that maybe Nintendo has. But let me ask you this, Alex. Do you know how sensitive and intuitive those Sony controllers are? Are they like Wii Motion Plus intuitive?
Pretty much, because not only does it have an accelerometer in it, they actually talk about it in the PlayStation blog.
Right.
Not only does it have an accelerometer, but it works in conjunction with the PlayStation Eye.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's true one-to-one motion.
That is good shit right there. Well, the only thing we can do right now is wait and pan out and see how these motion controls work. Okay.
Right.
And whether can we even call Project Natal motion control or not. I don't even know what the fuck to call Natal. Camera? I'll just call it a fucking camera. Call it a fucking camera that you can talk to or something. So let's fucking put it this way. The thing with Natal is, well, I am impressed. Yes, I'm one of the dummies impressed by, you know, not that you said that, but I mean, I was impressed with Milo and I still am. But, you know, it's just what you're telling me makes sense, you know, Alex? And right. I agree with you on this for once, you know, and we'll have to just wait and see, because I will tell you this. I'm not going to buy, even if I have a PlayStation 3 for some reason, I will not buy their motion control. I'll wait some time for that. Because I'm even skeptical of that, you know. I think developers, some developers or publishers, I should say more publishers than developers, will abuse it. They'll come up with some stupid shit. They'll come up with some, you know, let's play batting cage or some shit like that, you know. We see, I'm maybe pessimistic, but we already saw that with the Wii, Alex. You know, we saw, we see shit like that. And if Sony and them are going to do it, they're going to do it again for those, you know, and whatever the fucking Tall's going to do. So I'm going to wait a while until there's some viable games, unless there is a viable, you know, not legitimate, but a viable game that really makes the motion more of a game than a gimmick, you know, because the Wii has a lot of gimmicks. And I think that what's going to happen with the Sony motion control too, and even the Tall, you know, well, we already saw gimmick demo fucking worthless wear on there. So I think, but in all, I am just happy with my old fashioned controller.
Okay.
Good old wired. So I'm done. That's all I got to say on that.
This is a footnote, because I'm actually researching on Atal right now. It says here, the depth sensor, so this answered my question, consists of an infrared projector combined with a monochrome CMOS sensor and allows the Project Atal sensor to see in 3D under, get this, any ambient light condition. But it still needs ambient light. The sensing range of the depth sensor is adjustable, with the Project Natal software capable of automatically calibrating the sensor based on gameplay and the player's physical environment, such as the presence of couches. So Project Natal is reportedly based on software technology developed internally by Microsoft and hardware intellectual property acquired from Time of Flight camera developer 3DV Systems. Yeah, before agreeing to sell all its assets in March 2009, 3DV had been preparing its own depth-sensing webcam controller, known as the Z-Cam. So, it does do that. But I think what's going to be tricky is trying to figure out, like, who's who. Because that's going to be tricky, trying to figure out who's who. Especially if people become, you know, get close to each other. But in any case, I have no doubts that Microsoft can do something really good with their console. But being as an old school gamer as I am, I do agree with Magus that I hope that old school controllers won't die. And I'll tell you why. Wagging your hands and arms gets very tiring.
Makes you look stupid sometimes.
That's not good for prolonged gameplay. If you're playing for hours on end, it's not going to help you out. Especially for an RPG, it wouldn't make sense to actually go through menus using motion controls.
Oh, you know? Hell no.
So, I think there's still room for traditional controllers, but on the flip side, I do see motion controllers become more popular. You know that whole, oh, mouse and keyboard is like the way to go for first-person shooters? Well, guess what motion controllers can do, especially with the more accurate ones? 1-to-1 precision when it comes to aiming.
It could do RTSs. It could do an RTS. I mean, I can totally see that. That is a good point. You know, the Wii, I could see the Wiimote doing an RTS, you know? I could totally see that. And I think with that, Alex, we're going to take our break and come back with the elitist, stupid elitist fanboy comment of the week.
On the Review Club, we review from a different angle than most. We prefer not to ask whether a game is good because, let's face it, there'll always be somebody out there who'll appreciate the subtle complexities of Super Noah's Ark 3D. Instead, our Review Club asks, who's this game good for? We're a diverse group, and we can always be counted on some lively conversations. So check us out on iTunes or on our website at www.gamesand.me.
All right, now we are back with I'm going to talk about our Elitist Fanboy comment of the week. And guess where it comes from, Alex?
Where?
Game Facts!
Wow. It's like...
Hell! Fanboy hell, full of fanboy demon brats that fucking, you know, that just live there and feed off each other, you know? And they like to pummel each other with evil poning threads, Alex.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Okay, today's victim, though, will be WOW, or World of Warcraft Fanatic 66. And this is what he says. MMORPGs are the way of the future. They'll replace all RPGs, including single-player RPGs. So shut the fuck up about your Baldur's Gate, faggots. That's exactly what he said, and it was a threat about Baldur's Gate.
Wow.
So, is it going to replace RPGs? I'll tell you, no, it will not ever replace the single-player RPG, Alex. I don't think it will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know, I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of MMOs, but I'm a big fan of RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reason why I like the single-player RPG is... the best single-player RPGs tell a story, you know, they get you involved. You play that role, right?
Yeah.
In an MMO, see, someone said, I watched a documentary on Dungeons & Dragons once, and someone said it best, okay? I don't know who it was, but someone said it best. He said it, you know, the uniqueness of Dungeons & Dragons was that you and your friends were adventurers, and you know, you were the sole adventurers, not the sole, but you were unique in this special world, right?
Mm-hmm.
In an MMO, you go in and every fucking citizen's some sort of hero.
And yet somehow they want to make it sound like you're still unique.
Yeah, you're not unique, though. You're not fucking unique in MMO. You go around, you're a night elf warrior or something, and then you go in and you're like, I'm going to be the best, and you find about six other who are like 10 times stronger than you are.
Well, here's a good example, okay? When you start... the game. I mean, I don't know if they've remedied this dialogue, but when you buy the Burning Crusade, and I'm pretty sure WoW fanatics out there already have this expansion, they introduce two races, which is the Draenei and the Blood Elves. The Blood Elves are basically the highborn, the pointy ears that point up and stuff, as opposed to the side. I think, if I remember correctly, when we started that, it specifically made mention this as one of the few remaining blood elves. And I was thinking to myself, the game is about 13 million people right now. And I'm pretty sure what happened during this launch is that everyone wanted to be a blood elf. So I don't think that applies anymore.
You're not. The blood elf population was saved by millions of people. So... That's just the problem, one of the problems I have with it. And then the other problem I have is I don't mind playing with stats and stuff. sorry about that. But in all honesty, you know, I love stats, playing with stats in the RPG, but it feels like it's just too much emphasis, and the grinding aspect of it is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's more ridiculous than, you know, like some of these older school RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you grind, there's like no set goal. It's just to get to the higher level. While that is a goal in itself, there's not the greater goal, you know, to it. Not to, you know, to go defeat it. I mean, there you could go raid dungeons and stuff, right, Alex?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no goal to finish the story or any conclusion to it. It's just, it keeps going, and once you're maxed out, what the fuck are you going to do? Start another character?
Well, you know, in the guy's defense, the mythology of World of Warcraft is pretty, it's pretty compelling. Most of the mythology is actually, you know, the way that I kind of see World of Warcraft, it's kind of like Disneyland, but it's not the same thing. You go to Disneyland to experience the characters like, you know, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, you know, even some Star Wars characters, you know, for Star Tours and all that stuff. It's the place to experience this sort of thing. Now, you go to World of Warcraft if you're heavily invested in the story. So, like, let's say you played Warcraft 1, 2, and 3, and, of course, you have read the books and you're really into the lore, then World of Warcraft is your Disneyland.
That is an awesome point. You're visiting the fantasy world you're reading about.
Yep.
So I try to get into the lore. You know what I do like? I like the old Warcraft games. Like Warcraft 3 was great. Mm-hmm. You know? I loved Warcraft 3.
Yeah.
No one really talks about that game for some reason. But I loved it. I had a blast with it. And I thought the story was great in it.
Yeah.
You know, it really had a good, really, really great campaign story. Mm-hmm. But World of Warcraft, everyone's like, it's so different from MMOs. And I've played a lot of MMOs. I played Ashran's Call. Mm-hmm. You know, I've played EverQuest. You know, it's not Evercrack to me. It's, you know, EverQuit for me.
Yeah.
But, I played EverQuest, Ashran's Call, Camelot, the Dark Ages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Guild Wars, because that's the free one, the supposed free one. I've played a bunch of them. I've even played, like, you know, FLYFF, some of these free ones.
Yeah.
Even the horrible Shin Megami Tensei one. And they're all the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see any differentiation. I even played EVE Online, and that's just an MMORPG with spaceships.
Well, that's why the new expansion, Cataclysm, is so compelling. And the reason why is because obviously and this is something unique to World of Warcraft, if I'm not mistaken, by the way. And by the way, if you guys want to chime in into any kind of, you know, conversation we have, feel free to write us at, you know, what is it? TPPPG@gamesend.me, right?
Right. I think it's, or is it Anthony@gamesend.me?
Well, that's your personal email address, but you can write to Magus or TPPPG@gamesend.me for the previous conversation or the current one. If I remember correctly, World of Warcraft is the only MMO that basically went in and said, you know what? Time's up. We're going to be changing the entire world map. Kind of like what happened with Final Fantasy VI with the World of Balance and the World of Ruin, you know?
That was great.
In fact, that's exactly what they're doing. They are going to destroy Azeroth in the new expansion.
But what will that mean for the old expansions?
Well, they still exist because they're all on separate worlds. And they've been tuned so that minimal changes would need to happen. Blizzard does this because of one important thing. The way that the zones are broken up in World of Warcraft is very uneven. You got sprawling plains like the Barrens, and you get like other sprawling plains too, which is a problem if you want to add more features for transportation. Well, guess what they did? With the new expansion, they're going to segment the zones a lot more, meaning they're making big zones into smaller subsections, and they're going to redo some of the quests in the game. And the best part about it is they're going into every single dungeon and making it even, you know, friendlier, I suppose. For the lack of a better explanation. Because one of the biggest complaints about World of Warcraft, obviously, from the very beginning, is exactly what you said. This is the same as every single MMO out there. I still need to raid to get my good shit. But this is going to change. Not to say that, you know, you still won't get the best armor unless you raid. You still could do that. But one thing that, WoW, personally, I felt that set it apart from all the other MMOs is that you are in control of your character's future, and you do quests and all that stuff, but they help propel you forward into the lore. And there is no ending to the game, obviously, because they just keep on building and building. But it's nice to see that Blizzard has acknowledged the fact that, look, we fucked up from the very beginning. This is why we're going to destroy the world. We're going to fix it.
Destroy it to fix it. While it sounds interesting, I don't know. I'll see how it plays out. I don't know if it's enough incentive to get me into the game. You know, I MMOs just don't do it for me, you know? And I mean, if you like MMOs, that's cool. I don't really see a problem. The only game's multiplayer that really got me was Neverwinter Nights multiplayer. And that was because it was set up differently, you know, to adhere to different play styles. You know, you could do different types of play modes. You could actually role play in stories and such with the dungeon master. You could play, like, you know, capture the flag matches and stuff.
Yeah,
that's why I really liked it.
It could also be argued, though, that you could do that in World of Warcraft. That's the thing. It depends. That's where I'm getting at, is your experience with World of Warcraft is hinged upon the people that you're playing it with. If you don't play it with people that you enjoy the game with, you're not going to enjoy it. A good example was when Vanessa and I and my friend Brandon and my friend Chris is actually part of Games and Me, we're all playing together. You know, we sometimes play on our own times and stuff, but sometimes we play together. It becomes more fun that way. It's kind of similar to when you're playing Gears of War. It's not fun in, you know, playing it yourself in multiplayer, right? Because it doesn't make sense. It's a multiplayer game. You're supposed to play it with other people.
But I didn't have any friends to play it with, though.
Exactly.
You know, and all, you know, all my friends are into gaming. Well, not all of them, but they're into gaming, but they don't like MMOs. And I did play Astron's Call with friends, mm-hmm. but I still didn't have fun with it, though.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't know why. I mean, I have, you know, I'll admit, I have a better time. Yes, I'm going to mention Halo, folks. But I have a funner time playing Halo squad matches with a team of friends than some random douchebag trash-talking fucks, okay? Or Gears of War or even COD 4, Alex, you know?
Well, because here's the thing. You're drawn to competitive-type games. But you played these MMOs. I don't think you played enough of the MMOs up to the point where it becomes competitive.
Oh, yeah. I played Astron's Call till I was like level 50.
Huh.
I don't know why, I did.
Have you done PvP with it?
Yes, I did.
Huh.
And I still didn't like it. When I played World of Warcraft about a couple years ago, I played until I was like level 30, 40, and I did a few PvP. I still didn't like it. Huh. It still didn't do it for me, dude.
Huh.
PvP didn't do it for me at all.
Very interesting.
You know, I just don't like those type of games. I do spend massive amounts of time with them, and I just don't like them. It's the game type for me. It's just the game type that completely turns me off from them.
Well, not to take up too much of this, because obviously we're talking about this too extensively, but you might want to. You know, I'm not trying to say that you should get back into it, because, God forbid, I got out of MMOs. I'm not planning to go back in. maybe try to examine, like, why exactly. Because that's something that's very difficult for even myself. When I hate something, like, you know, I find it so compelling that I have to figure out why I hate something. Because it's, you know, it's human nature to hate something. It's very easy to dislike something, but it's even more difficult to try to figure out the reason why.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, I know that might be the genre for you, but there has to be an aspect of the genre that annoys you other than that.
You know what I think it is?
Hmm.
I just think it's the lack of goal and the lack of uniqueness.
Hmm.
I really think it's that aspect, you know?
I see. I get you.
But, you know, even like... You know, competitive games, they have an end game and an end goal. It seems like once you leave World of Warcraft, the world's still going on without you.
Right.
And I mean, that sounds cool and all, but, you know, when you're not playing, you know, it's just, you're not really having an I don't know. I just don't like that.
We'll talk about that some other time.
Yeah,
because
we'll
that's
have to
something
talk
that,
about it.
You know, it's completely different, but. Going back to the main point, in a very short statement, I agree with Magus. I don't think that RPGs are just going to die because MMOs exist. No one will want to play MMOs forever.
No. Some of us like our stories to have a beginning, middle, and end.
And a finite end, for that matter.
Yeah, and sometimes an expansion pack ending, like Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah.
So that's always good, but... I think that'll wrap it up for this episode, Alex.
Yeah, I think that about does it for this episode of TPPPG. So remember, you can check out Anthony's podcast. This podcast? What am I saying? You can check out Anthony's YouTube channel at youtube.com/MagusX1. You can also check out all his news articles that he posts, the videos, and editorials, right? You're going to write one, right? Right?
I should be writing one here pretty soon.
At gamesend.me, the newly redesigned Games and Me website. By the time we launch this, the brand new Games and Me website will be live.
And on my YouTube channel, I'll still go by Magus.
Yes. You'll find Magus's, you know, articles all over on the website and stuff at gamesend.me. Remember, we have a forum at forum.gamesend.me. Just sign up for it and we'll, you know, approve your article or your username. Article. What am I saying tonight? I'm just all over the place. You know, and then you can interact with all of us and stuff. And of course, we have our chat room at gamesend.me again. It's on the bottom of every page on the main site, so you won't miss a thing. So until next week, we'll see you later.